Today is March 15th, 2018. My name is Deborah Schwartz, and I am sitting today with good citizen and political activist Trubi Shock on behalf of the Mill Valley Library and the Mill Valley Historical Society. Trubi, thank you so much for sitting with me today here in the Mill Valley Library in the recording room down by the creekside room.
It's amazing.
Yes, nice and quiet in here, isn't it?
Yes.
Trubi, yours is a name that is familiar to so many people here in Mill Valley. You've really been so much of the fabric of our community on so many levels. And I know that just in our pre-interview talk, there's so much to talk about. Just in your involvement here locally through your community actions and your political actions. But before we go there, first of all, your name, Trubi Shock, seems to have a story of its own.
Yes, it does.
And I'd love to hear that story and to hear a little contextual information about your family and what brought you to Mill Valley.
Okay. My mother was named Trubi. I'm named after her. And she was named Trubi because her parents were named Truscott, so they liked the sound of Trubi Truscott.
Is that an actual name?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's Trubi. Dutch.
Oh, Dutch. Okay.
But we're English.
Mm-hmm.
So I was named after my mother. And when my kids were born, they said if there was going to be a girl, they didn't want to have another Trubi the third. And I have to spell it every time.
Mm-hmm. Let's spell it right now.
T-R-U-B-E-E.
Trubi.
I got Trouble, Trudy. Trudy spelled thousands of ways. Sometimes it's a pain.
It's just that simple, though. T-R-U-B-E-E.
Yes.
A true bee. You are kind of a worker bee here.
Yes,
now.
I am. That's
yes.
Right.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about your family ancestry, if you would.
I have deep, deep family history in the East and in the South. And my family came over from England before the Revolution. Anyway, my father was from the South, and he's from North Carolina. His name was John Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Annapolis, and he graduated in class of 1921. And my mother had been previously married, and she lived in San Francisco, in Los Gatos. And she met my husband, or her husband, John, at a Navy at a dance in a hotel in San Francisco, and they got married in New York. And in 1934, I think, and I was born in 1935, and my father died in 1936.
Oh dear.
Yes. So that was. Traumatic. My mother never remarried, and she worked the rest of her life as a single mother.
Had she had children with her previous marriage?
No.
So
no.
You were an only child.
I was only child, and my mother never married again.
Oh my!
And so she left Washington D.C. and came across to we came back to San Francisco area to rejoin her family.
Mm.
And I was about 3 or 4 years old. And then she was having mental problems. We discovered later on that she was manic depressive, years later. But she couldn't take care of me. So I was sent to a private school in San Diego called Duffy's Ranch School for girls. And it was up near Fallbrook, California, just south of the border of the county border. And I spent 7 years there. And there was 30 kids at the time I went. When I was in sixth grade, when I went to the third grade, they took off the second grade. When I went to the fourth grade, they took off the third grade. So I was always the youngest until the sixth grade. Which was kind of traumatic in a way, you know, you get teased and stuff like that. And it was an amazing place. There were 30 kids to the high school. So there were three of us in the eighth grade.
Oh.
Which is amazing.
A private school.
Yes, it was private school.
Really very,
it was,
very.
And we had classes in the day, and then at 3 o'clock we'd go horseback riding around. And it was old CCC camp. You know what CC is?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was old CC camp.
But and, others may not know. Why yeah, don't you explain that?
Civilian Conservation Corps.
The conservation of the civilian conservation.
It was what corps? One of the agencies that Roosevelt set
up. Yeah, Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Part of the New Deal.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
CCC,
yeah.
Which we had. Groups of the CCC here in Mill Valley as well.
Yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
And so it was a
Civilian Conservation something Corps.
CCC, Civilian yeah. Conservation Corps.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a wonderful place and full of adventure and one room schoolhouse for the grades second through eight. No bigger than this. Well, a little bit double this room here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I spent my years riding horses and getting a good education. And the headmistress was a Quaker. And so from there, when I graduated from Duffy's, my mother was searching for a small school that was good academics, a public school. And of all places she picked was Beverly Hills. So she moved to Beverly Hills, and I went to Beverly Hills High.
And this is what year?
1949 to 53.
So who were some of your classmates?
Well, one of the most interesting things that you would know would be Dick Chamberlain was a classmate of not he was a year ahead of me.
Richard Chamberlain.
Yes.
The heartthrob.
Yes. And we were on the student court together.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Beverly Hills is an amazing school because they have everything you could want.
Mm-hmm. Horses? Do they have horses?
No, they don't have horses. but they have the money to buy all the facilities. You know, they have an amazing auditorium. And the art department is just amazing. And so talented. People were so talented. And I got really involved in activities at Beverly Hills. I was on the student girls student honor clubs, and I was on the student court, which was we met in the tower, and we were to pass judgment on the infractions of students.
Oh, right. Right.
You know, but so many
jury
people,
of your peers.
Yes, it was, exactly.
Yes.
And I also worked on the yearbook, and I was art editor in the senior year. So so that was really the beginning of my involvement in different activities.
Did you find it lonely to be away
yes.
from your mother?
And, no, I wasn't. I didn't realize all this stuff later on. I was a good little girl. And I didn't realize later on that I had a strange childhood.
Oh.
Because of my mother.
Because you really had no family unit.
No, I didn't.
So you were literally living in a kind of a collective of your schoolmates and your teachers were like family.
Yeah, I would spend a lot of time in my friends' my classmates' homes, you know, weekends and stuff like that.
And vacations.
Yeah. And and vacations, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So then I graduated from Beverly Hills. Beverly Hills had this formal graduation. Not caps and gowns. Formal dress, girls dressed with formal dresses. Long, formal dresses.
You mean with long, beautiful gloves and...
No, not that, but, you know, bouffant dresses and...
So it was a very posh affair.
Yes,
just a simple graduation was.
And the chairs were out in the lawn, and this school was this big lawn. Most famous thing at Beverly Hills High was called the swim gym. You ever remember the movie, Is It Wonderful Life?
It's a Wonderful Life, yes, with Jimmy Stewart.
Yes.
And Donna Reed.
Yes, well, at the beginning of the movie, he's dancing.
Right, where the floor opens
yes,
up.
Yes, that's Beverly Hills High.
No way.
Yes.
So that's Beverly Hills where they're dancing. Someone hits the button. The floor opens up and there's a
and they
big
dance.
Swimming pool and everybody
yes,
jumps in.
Yes, yes. That's in the swim gym, which is the basketball gym and the floor is underneath it. And it does part at the center of the, the line of the basketball floor. It parts
where
there.
The pool's underneath
and it goes underneath the seats. I was on the swim team, and we would crawl down through the snack bar area, and we would crawl literally on our hands and knees and our stomachs to get inside and drop down into the pool under the floor.
So
we could enter, do aquacades, and enter with the floor open.
So you mean to make it the ultimate entrance, you
yes,
would ooch down into, slip through into the water
yes.
underneath the floor. Someone pushes the button, the floor opens up, and up you come like Venus in the half shell.
Yes. Yes.
That sounds pretty cool. How dramatic.
Yes.
That is not something you see in most high schools in this country.
No one has it. But that's the kind of thing that Beverly Hills had.
At the time, were you aware of how fantastic a situation that was?
No.
How many students in your graduating class?
About 200, 300.
And what year did you graduate?
1953. Yeah. And then I went to San Jose State. But I had gone up to, the summer before I graduated, I went up to see my grandmother in Carmel. And some of my family were living in Carmel and Pebble Beach. And my grandmother was living in a garage apartment. She had worked for Navy families and things, but she had this garage apartment. And I was up there and I met all these wonderful people. I thought, this is for me.
Carmel?
Or Northern California was for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Carmel. Oh, my.
Yeah.
I mean, it's lovely.
Yeah. So I applied to Berkeley and I applied to San Jose State and I got admitted to both places, but I went to San Jose State. I wanted to get out of L.A. I wanted to get north and, you know, I just fell in love with Northern California.
What did you fall in love with?
The people and the surroundings, you know, Pebble Beach. What else could you imagine?
Well, it's very dramatic, of course.
Yes, yeah.
But there are some very beautiful beaches in Southern California.
Well, I had during my mother's life a kind of a nomad life where she worked around. I lived in San Diego. I lived in Laguna Beach. I lived in the Inglewood set areas near the airport, San Francisco, LA airport. And LA was getting ugly. I mean, it was, you know.
Sprawl.
Yeah, sprawls. Yeah. So I made the break of getting out of Los Angeles, getting up there. And also San Jose had a wonderful art department. And Berkeley did not have this great art department. And so I went to San Jose and got my degree in San Jose, the commercial art. And went from there to work at the old White House department store in the advertising department, which was, it was a time of wonderful graphics work done in the advertising was so different. The retail advertising was so different in the 50s. They had these huge advertising departments, and there was layouts, there was finished, and there was copy, and there was a model, and everything was done by hand.
Mad Men, right?
Yes, exactly. It was that period.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so glamorous in San Francisco, in that field. We would go to the White House department store is on It was on a block between Sutter and Gary and Grant, half the block. And it was one of the original French mercantile stores, like the City of Paris. It was better than City of Paris. And it was so glamorous. Everybody was carrying around their portfolio and things like this.
And so,
I met my husband. I was in San Francisco. I lived on what was then residence halls, big, large.
In the Tenderloin?
No.
Somewhere else?
No, Pacific Heights.
Pacific Heights residence halls.
Yes.
Huh.
I don't think they exist anymore. But at that time, in that the 50s and 60s, old mansions in Pacific Heights and Russian Hill, but Pacific Heights primarily, were converted to residence halls because they had all these rooms.
So what was it like inside?
Well, the one I lived in was an old Spreckles mansion.
Ah.
And there was about 25, 35 people in there. And there were three of us in this one room. And it had a circular driveway, and it was a corner of Pacific Avenue and Franklin. You walked in these double doors, these fancy doors, and there was a staircase that went up like this.
You always think of the Spreckle Mansion. Any pictures I've seen, there's some grand staircase.
Oh, yes, it's a grand staircase. And there was room. All the bedrooms around there were divided up into two or three people into a room. But the greatest thing was you had two meals a day, breakfast and dinner, in this wonderful paneled dining room.
Oh my gosh! It sounds incredible.
Looking across the bay to Bergen County.
So you are a working girl.
Yes.
In an industry at the peak of its glamour.
Yes.
Living in a renovated mega mansion.
Yes.
With people cooking your food.
Yes.
And other people your own age, women that you're living
yes.
with, and so it's like sort of like the most outrageously glamorous dorm situation
yes.
you could ever
and
imagine.
I think my rent was about $200 a month.
Which is not, that's pretty expensive for back then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but that included meals.
That included meals. It included everything.
Yes.
For $200 a month, you were allowed to live.
Yes.
And did you share the bathroom with the three?
Yes. No, I think the bathrooms were down the hall.
So that was shared with lots
of
people.
Yeah, but there were four of us in this one big room, and we were right at the front. And I made good friends with one of the roommates, and we remained friends for a long time.
It brings to mind those movies that you see with Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell and the women all together in some glamorous,
yes, exactly.
with lovely furniture and their outfits. And they're all, somehow they're involved in some kind of harebrained scheme or something, and they all support each other. And if you hadn't had the context of understanding that this is actually how women could live.
Yes.
To me,
there were men too, but they were not mixed together. I think there was an area above the garage where the 10 or 12 men lived. Or they had separate rooms in the third floor.
I've never heard this before. I have to tell you, my mind is just running right now.
Yes,
imagining.
It was And then it closed. I think most of them closed down. You don't hear about this anymore.
Uh-uh.
But that's how young women found a place to live.
How old were you at that time?
21, 22.
So somewhere between a boarding house and a sorority and really cool dorm.
Yeah. We used to go down to a place called the Monkey Inn, which was about at Pacific Avenue in Van Ness. And it was a beer joint. And, after dinner or something like that, a bunch of us go down there. And that's where I met my husband, because he was in the Army at Presidio. And we got married. And
how long after you met did you marry?
Less than a year. And then we got married at Swedenborgen Church, which was a very famous church in San Francisco, a non-denominational church, I think it is. And then we lived in on Union Street. No, on Green Street. And then we lived on Anza Street, and then we moved to Presidio Avenue. And by then I had two boys. 1963. Then we became good friends with a couple that lived next door on Presidio Avenue. And they bought a house in Mill Valley. And then pretty soon they said, well, there's a house across the street that's for sale. And so we looked at it, we bought it. And it was a Matilda Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they paid about $16,000 and we paid $17,000.
Oh, please don't rub it in. Before we go on to Mill Valley, I just have to ask one last question about your glamorous San Francisco days.
Okay.
I'm enthralled. Tell me what a normal outfit would be that you would wear as a young woman in a glamorous...
Oh, God. No glamorous. No, no, no.
No?
No.
You didn't have, like... I mean, you look at those Alfred Hitchcock movies and the clothes are phenomenal. You didn't... The styles of that day. How did you carry yourself? What were you... What would the visuals have been like?
Oh, God. I don't remember. I don't remember. Because I tried to dress like everybody else in the department.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember anything.
Did you ever wear pants?
No. No. No, no, no. We wear skirts or dresses. No. No, the pants, no.
Did you always wear heels?
Yes.
These little things.
Yes.
Hats?
No. No gloves either. No, I don't think so.
And this is in the 50s in San Francisco, so
yes.
We've got a...
57, 58.
Well, you've got a beatnik scene going on.
Yes, it was starting. And then, so, that was interesting. My husband was a writer then. He was stationed at Presidio. And we began to go to the beat places on Grand Avenue. And my husband and I collaborated on a book. I illustrated it, and he wrote it, called Life is a Lousy Drag.
Life is a Lousy Drag?
Yes. And it was a pamphlet-sized book. And we sold it for $1 each. And... it's now, you can find it online for mega bucks.
Really? I would love to. Do you have one of the books?
I have one of them, but you can find it online.
Yeah,
also.
Right.
Yeah.
Life is a Lousy Drag.
Yes.
So you were taking in the scene. You were,
yes,
you
yes,
were
yes.
paying attention
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
Yes. Interesting.
So,
okay.
So I was working at this, interesting. I got pregnant while I was working at White House, and I had to resign.
Because you were pregnant?
Yes.
Because that was an insupportable...
That was their policy was.
As soon as a woman became pregnant, she was no longer a viable employee?
Right.
Hmm.
So then I had to... my husband was working, and we were struggling. And then when I moved over to Mill Valley, I had my two kids, but I began to freelance doing retail ads, because I was a layout artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go into the city and pick up the stuff, bring it home, and do the layouts and bring the stuff back to the city. I worked in the city of Paris and an emporium also. Doing layouts.
May I ask you on a personal level, did this offend you that you found that the moment you became pregnant, you were no longer...
It was just a fact of life.
Something you just...
Yeah. No. It was just a fact of life. That's the way things were.
Did Did were there women that actually put off having families or getting married because
No. Because there wasn't the pill.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I sometimes think back on it, you know, amazing God, why? You
know? How did I do that?
Yeah.
Okay, so now we can get back to
Mill Valley.
We can get back to Mill Valley here. Okay, back to Mill Valley.
Yes.
We had to do a slight little adjustment with the seating here. So now that you're back, you're in living in Mill Valley on Matilda Avenue.
1963, we moved, October 63. And I had my best friend living across the street from me, and we had a good time. And we did a lot of things together, and I remember one time I had to take her to the hospital to get one of her kids born. Mm-hmm. So one of my neighbors one time, about 64, 65, invited me to go to an AAUW meeting, mm-hmm. American Association University Women meeting, and suggested I might want to join. So I went to a meeting, and yes, I did want to join. Mm-hmm. And it just opened up the world for me. It was one of the most significant things I ever did in my life was to join AAUW, which was it's an international organization of university women, and had branches all over the country and all over the world. And they have events, they have meetings, they have small interest groups, and the organization was filled with leaders in the community, city council. Almost at one point, all the women on the city council were AAUW members.
AAUW.
AAUW. Mm-hmm. And they're like the League of Women Voters. Mm-hmm. League of Women Voters is focused on legislation and politics. And AAUW has a broader scope of literature, education, cultural, international relations. Anyway, I became very involved. I started with doing the bulletin, and then I was vice president of the program, and then I was president, and then I was district.
You climbed the ranks.
I went up the chairs.
Yes, something that young people today may not be able to understand, but I think is worth noting here, is the extreme power of women's organizations going way back.
Yes,
where even before women could vote.
Yes.
But the collaboration and the commitment to women that women had in working together to create major change that maybe they couldn't even push through at the end, but have ready to go so that their husbands or other men or people in power could then launch mm-hmm. the actions, the political actions. And so I know here in Mill Valley, we have Laura Lyon White and mm-hmm. Edna Foster and early
A lot women. Of the Outdoor Art Club members were also members of AAUW.
Yes. So this is a profound, influential force mm-hmm. in this country, mm-hmm. are these women organizations.
Yes.
So it's good to get a little context for those that are younger people that are listening.
Yeah. There was no question, there was no problem about getting people to join if you had to have a degree. And no problem about people getting involved. And it's harder today to get people involved, mm-hmm. I think, because they say, oh, I gotta work. Well, a lot of people that were members were also worked.
And you had three children.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a lot of commitment to your time. Anytime you get involved mm-hmm. in an organization, I mean, any of the organizations that we're going to talk about, the groups that we're going to talk about, It's usually a lot more work than you think you have time for.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet you're doing
it. So, I mentioned people that really had influenced me were that list there. I think most of them, except for Don Hunter, were AUW members.
Okay, so but people that are hearing this don't know is that before we began our interview, we had a short chat, and we talked about people that have been influential, and you have a few names here that you mentioned, and through the AAUW names on your list.
Well, Vera Schultz, who is legendary in Marin County, well, actually is in Democratic politics. I'll come back to her. Allison Rudy was a great friend, and she was a great cook, and she was a lover of the arts and very involved, and she became mayor. We worked together.
In Mill Valley.
Mill Valley. Mm-hmm. And Kit Wallace was an internationalist. She was she worked for the big international organization in the city. But Kit was the president of AUW. Allison was never president of AUW. Vera Schultz was very involved. All three of those women, and there were other women. But Vera Schultz, I knew she was at that time that I was involved in AUW. She was a past leader. I mean, she had done her business, and she was like 70 or 80 years old at the time. And I asked her to form a interest group called about politics, because I had gotten involved in politics, in precinct work and stuff like that, and together we formed this interest group within AUW to have meetings and have speakers. And she was a big influence in my life. Allison, I worked with her in the Gourmet Group.
Gourmet Group.
Yes, in AUW. And Kit as I said, an internationalist. But Kit was really my mentor.
When you say internationalist,
she went up to the national board.
Mm-hmm.
She rose to that level. One of AUW's focus was on international relations, State Department. That big a deal. And she had been president, she was my mentor. She really was. She guided me and she taught me, or I absorbed what she did.
And what? Give me an example of the ways that she simply, behaved that moved you or affected you.
How to run a meeting, how to move things forward. How to pull groups together.
Leadership skills.
Yes, leadership. Mm-hmm. Yes. And Allison was different. She was softer. Kit was loving, but she was I won't use the word hard-nosed, but she was strong. And Kit was the one who got me involved in the Bicentennial Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Kit was the chairman of the the Library Board of Trustees.
Okay, see, now we're in Mill Valley and we're with the AAUW, and then from while you were with the AAUW, you became involved with the Bicentennial Committee.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't know much about the Bicentennial Committee. I would love to learn more.
Okay. 1974 to 76, the country was celebrating the bicentennial,
mm-hmm.
the U.S. bicentennial, and all cities were invited to do their thing, whatever they wanted to do. and there was a county, there were state committees and county committees. And Kit Wallace was the, had been appointed by the city council to head up the Mill Valley celebration for the U.S. Bicentennial. She was also at the, on the library board at the same time. The city council appointed many people to that committee to create, do planning for the celebration.
And this is all volunteer?
Yes. Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yes. And I think I was at, Kit asked me to join the committee. And we worked on it for 2 years. And she was...
You started this in 74?
75. 76.
Yes, okay.
Yes. And they were developing their... They were formulating their plans, what they wanted to do. Then they had to do the budget. And then the budget had to be approved at the city council. So it was a long, long process. And the city had appointed different people representing the school district, Tam High, all the different components, Rotary Club, etc., Lions Club, Chamber of Commerce, the police department. It was well done. And so at one point, so Kit and I were working, still working on the committee together. We had about 15 people. Kit was appointed, she became the chair of the Library Board of Trustees. And she felt that she couldn't do both jobs. Mm-hmm. So she asked me to become chairman. So which meant to me that she had trusted me mm-hmm. to do, the, you know, to manage everything, which was really something.
Yeah.
So anyway, I took over as chairman. And then we really got down to brass tacks about planning everything. And we had a person representing this, the school district was Frank somebody. We had somebody representing the library board of trustees, which now was some Peg Tuescher. Sally Lieberman was representing the Art Commission. Bob Greenwood representing Tam High. So et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I train of thought here?
You said, oh darn, a minute ago, something.
I know. So many stories. We were planning our activities, and one of the things that the city was most enthralled with was the idea of a wind machine.
A wind machine?
Yeah. A pole with a huge windmill on it that some guy had come and proposed. I forgot what it was. So half of our budget went to pay for that.
Wait. Okay, I'm confused. So where's the pole to be installed?
Was going to be installed at the Civic Center. But this go, follow me.
Okay.
I was also on the county committee, which was representing the city of Mill Valley. And we had to deal with the county cultural affairs committee. And they would approve, the county had its own fair.
This is like a box in a box in a box in
exactly,
a box.
Exactly. the county fair used to be at the Art and Garden Center.
Mm-hmm.
When the Bicentennial came, the county moved its fair to the Civic Center.
Mm-hmm. And then stayed?
And stayed.
Yes. Huh. Okay, that's how that happened.
Yes, exactly. So there was, you know, the bureaucracy of that department. And we had to, everything we wanted to do, we had to be approved by the county department.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that, there's so many stories here.
Let's just condense it down to the one about the windmill, shall we?
Well, no, no.
I gotta hear that one.
So anyway, I've forgotten, but we had the city approved $2,000, of which half of it went to pay for this windmill, which is going to be a 20-foot pole with a propeller kind of windmill. So I had the city manager help me get this up to there, and we used the Lions Club, towed it up to the city. We placed it. They put it near the county fair, and lo and behold, some stupid jerk in his car caught the cable and broke it down. So it was destroyed.
Oh my goodness. Oops. Might as well just take a match to a pile of $100 bills there.
Yes. And then we had somebody in the Civic Center. They also had each city was to create a plaque. Mm-hmm. So we had a carved plaque said Mill Valley. And another thing was Tam High had an amazing drama department. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dan Caldwell and his whole department. And they had done the play Tom Paine in Mill Valley, mm-hmm, to rave reviews. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to have the Tam High Drama Department do Tom Paine in the small theater. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want us to do it. They thought it wouldn't grab enough people. So Sally Lieberman and I both went to our county supervisor, and we had to make the case for it, that it should be shown. We succeeded.
So as you describe this, I understand the machinations one has to go through when dealing with all these different people.
Yes.
You've got the city, you've got the county, you've got a lot of, and they're all collaborating with others. You're in a netting here.
Yes, but I have one more story.
Okay.
So this is where I want to set this straight.
Something to set straight, all
yes.
right?
The Mill Valley Memorial Day Parade was created by the Mill Valley Bicentennial Committee.
Oh.
Yes. Amongst our things that we wanted to do was to have a parade like every other city.
There were no parades, Memorial Day parades
before? There had been one before. Uh-huh. But it wasn't Memorial Day. It was the city wasn't doing the parade. Uh-huh. But during the bicentennial year, all towns want to do a parade. And of course, Carteret has theirs on the 4th of July. Uh-huh. And a lot of places wanted to do their parade. Well, we talked about it, and we said, we don't want to compete with the 4th of July. We want to do it the Memorial Day. So we planned it for Memorial Day. And that was a big, big, big job to do. And we had about 43 or 45 entries, parade, you know, bands and clubs and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. And you know where the Chase Bank is?
Uh-huh. And why don't you tell those that are listening right now in Mill Valley?
The Chase Bank in Mill Valley, mm-hmm, yes, at corner of Camino Alto. At that time, it was a 76 station. Mm-hmm. On the East Blythedale side, past that, was the Southern Marine Horsemen's Association ring, mm-hmm, where it was horses. There was no office building there. Mm-hmm. So we planned to have a carnival in that area. Mm-hmm. We were going to have a parade. The parade was going to end at the carnival at that location by East Blythedale. We were also going to do a rock concert. And it was going to be in the old community center, mm-hmm, which was a shack.
Mm-hmm. I remember it well. Yes. I love that place.
And so, I have newspaper clippings to show you. we got a our music chairman was Marilyn Smith, the Mountain Play fame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that was her first big gig. Mm-hmm. Was Mill Valley's Bicentennial Committee.
Mm-hmm.
She went and she knew everybody in the music field. She got us the rock stars.
Who did you get?
Okay. We had Clover and Soundhole.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to play off of the community center balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And Mario Cipollino was the Soundhole.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's, I don't know if he's still alive or not. And Clover was Huey Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean, somebody. Anyway, we didn't know it at the time that we had Huey Lewis there, or Mario Cipollino.
Because they hadn't become Huey Lewis in the news yet.
Oh,
this is just a homeboy.
Yes.
And the musical sons of Mill Valley, I call them. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, so.
And we wanted to, you know, Marilyn was her PR's instincts are so great.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to have a press release. I had to go to Don Hunter, who was his assistant. Don Hunter was, or what was Vern Hazen? Anyway, I had talked to the city. I think it was Vern Hazen. They were leery about the Rocks concert. They didn't want us to get a lot of people.
Mm.
So I couldn't advertise it. And so there were about 500 people that showed up, and I thought, I wanted to cry.
Because you had such big visions.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had such great musicians.
Yeah, yes, yes. But we didn't know that. But it was so sickening.
Oh, to be constrained by the bureaucratic process when you have an actual wonderful vision.
Yes.
It must have been so frustrating with all the work and
Yes.
The opportunity was there.
Yes.
So that must have been frustrating for you. Well, when we're setting it straight, what exactly are we setting straight here, Daddy?
Well, the parade.
Mm-hmm.
It was the creation of the Mill Valley Bicentennial Committee,
and
has lived forever. And afterwards, we couldn't do it anymore. I mean, we were breaking down. And I think for the Rotary Club took it on for a couple of years, and Paul Moe tried to work on it, and then of course Larry, the Hat, took it over.
Yes,
but it's not his thing.
Yes. No, but he keeps things alive.
Yes, he does.
Sure.
Yes, he does.
And the Memorial Weekend here in Mill Valley is a most beloved weekend.
Yes,
I mean, this is when the Mill Valley Historical Society has its annual Walk into History.
Yes.
This is when we have our pancake breakfast with the firemen. This is when we have our most wonderful Memorial Day parade. This is when you know Mill Valley's a real small town filled with lots of people doing wonderful things.
Yeah.
So I had not known the origin of that parade.
And the carnival after.
And the carnival after.
Yes.
I mean, it really is like it's the beginning of summer, I guess, in a way.
Yes,
so thank you so much for initiating that. Honestly, I didn't know. I guess I moved here right after it started, so it's good to know the origin of the memorial parade.
Yes, I need to get this started.
Yes, okay, thanks. Consider the record straight.
Okay,
so obviously you're describing the AAUW, the Bicentennial Committee, and you talk about the community center.
Yes.
But you've been very involved with the community center. And you talked about the old community center, which was a very small kind of older building, just a shack. Do you know the history of the old building?
I believe it was towed over from, it was, I saw pictures of it that had being carted over by on a truck over to the current, that location, the new location.
On Camino Alto near the middle school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Vera Schultz's doing, was she made it possible for the city to buy that land.
The marshland there.
Yes.
And then created into a public space.
Yes.
Thank you, Vera.
Yes. That was one of the things she did.
We have a beautiful community center.
Yes. So anyway, going back to the community center, at the same time, I was doing an awful lot of things. 1973, I don't know how it started, but, Jean Barnard was on the city council, and she proposed that we look for a site for an art center for the city.
For those that don't know who Jean Barnard is, why don't you give a little
information? Well, she was a giant in Mill Valley's history, and she was, so I think she was related to Garden of All. I think she grew up at the Garden of All.
Yep, Ralston White's
daughter,
niece.
Niece,
right.
Anyway,
his wife's sister's
daughter. At that time, she was on the city council,
mm-hmm.
and she became mayor, and she was. She would call at 7 o'clock in the morning, and wanted her answer and hang up and go on.
She was a force. I've heard her described as a very forceful person.
Yes. So anyway, she one day one council meeting suggested that we the city search for a community art center, because there were so many different arts organizations. Just springing up all over the place.
There were many artists here at that time.
Yes, there were. That bohemian element.
Tom Killian, in his interview, he talks about his parents' friends and the very many creative people that were socializing here in Mill Valley.
Yes. So Don Hunter was appointed to this ad hoc committee. Glenn Peterson, who was the chairman of the Art Commission, was appointed. Lyman Emerson was also appointed, and he was also a strong advocate for this. He had been chairman of the California Arts Council. He was on the County Art Commission, and he was on the Mill Valley Art Commission. And he was a very imposing person and very difficult. But anyway, he was appointed to this ad hoc committee, and I was appointed. And so we did many, many different things. We met and we talked, and Allison Rudy was also appointed. So there was Allison, Don, Lyman, myself, and Glenn Peterson. And so we talked. And then we decided to search the different sites. And two sites that we did, I remember distinctly, and they're all talked about in newspaper clippings, was the current cantina, had been a Purity grocery store.
That's right, on East Blythedale and Camino Alto.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the current MTC building, which had been a grocery store also. It was called the Port.
Where is that located?
The MTC, I mean, the Marin Theater
Company. Oh, the theater company over there by Eggers Plaza.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jolly King store was there. But before that, it had been, the theater company building had been a grocery store, and then it turned into a building of cubby holes of different little tiny shops.
Mm-hmm.
Really fascinating place. Mm-hmm. And of course, Mama's is still there. So that building was one of the places we looked at, and the cantina was one specifically I remember. And there's a lot of intrigue about that, but. So then we decided we needed to go to look at other art centers in other cities. So we took a day and we recruited people to go with us. There were about two or three carloads of people. We went first down to Palo Alto, then to Sunnyvale and Contra Costa and Richmond. It took the whole day, 250 miles if you're doing it, to drive around there. And I drew up a plan of, we looked at the staff, the financing, the programs, how do you, you know, everything you could had to know.
All the recognizance for understanding what it is that was truly necessary.
Yes, yes. And then we came back and I think we made a report, and at this, things were really brewing about this time. It's 1975, 76, and I was also in the Bicentennial Committee at the same time. Evie Topper had, who at the time was Art Commission Chairman in 75, 76, I think, she went out and would do things on her own. Like, if you ever heard of the fountain, the Plaza Fountain?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, you mean the idea that she had for
yeah,
a
that
Plaza
was that,
Fountain?
That, yes.
Yeah, that one got shot down, right?
Oh, God, yes. And that was the community, the Outdoor Club killed that. That was Jean Barnard who killed that. So this time she was also, Evie was also going out and applying for grants, National Endowment for the Art grants, to do a community center.
And you were talking in art, but she, art center, but she's looking for a community center at the as
no,
well.
She was looking for a grant to finance the studies.
Mm-hmm.
And she went out. You know, for, Lyman also had done a grant search before that, and he got shot down by that. The council, you know, said no. These people were going out on their own,
mm-hmm.
not working for the city.
Mm-hmm.
And Evie, there was a huge, huge meeting where she was presenting her plan. Lawrence Halperin showed up. She got him showed up. And there were 200 people in the council chambers. And it was chaotic. And so it was very tumultuous time. And then we working with I've forgotten who else, where another grant was applied for and we got it. $20,000 in 1970.
So it's tumultuous because you know the difficulty
the individuals were doing their own thing, and they were like Lyman was very very bossy.
So it was because of cross purposes. Is that what was going on?
They weren't following procedures.
Okay, so then people resented that, and there was
the council didn't like it.
Oh, I see. Yes, okay.
Because this was city things, and there were the council really shot down Evie Topper,
mm-hmm.
and also Lyman. So a third attempt. And we got $20,000.
And this is for the art center?
The NIH to study.
To NIH to study. This is just the first stage you're getting.
To study the attitude of the arts, to the arts, the city's attitudes to the arts. And Lou Harris got the grant to do an inventory, to do a study. And I got a small portion of the grant, $1,800, to do an inventory of the people, the facilities, and the organizations
that
are involved in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And the copy of that is in the library.
Mm-hmm.
That was 1978. So that was my small portion.
And ultimately, as we move along with this, what was the final consensus? How because this ultimately brings forward the community center.
Yes, yes. So that I think that kind of stayed in place for a while. But meanwhile, John Hunter had also been involved in that. All along the way, Don Hunter was involved. And then he just took it and plotted and so slowly just continued to work on it and work on it and work on it. And then there was, the original, probably in the mid-90s, the city formed another committee to, at this time, the Mill Valley Middle School had been built, and their plan was to use the other piece of land to the north of the middle school. And Don negotiated the transfer of the school land to the community center. So he was not plotting, but he was just not letting it die and continued to work on it. So that's how it really happened.
So that's how it took all that time. It's what started out as, let me make sure I get this right. Started out initially as the concept was to have an art center.
Yes.
And then there's that public space, this idea of public space where people can share and collaborate. And that over time, and as a result of various personalities and clashes with the city and so on, this thing slowly moves ahead. Don Hunter's pushing,
yes,
just patiently keeping it alive, having it thrive, keeping it from dying.
Yes.
And then eventually, when opportunity comes and as things gently unfold, or slowly unfold, I should say, the end result turns out to be the community center.
Yes.
Not an art center, no. But although they always have art in there.
And it's an amazing building. And arts, everything goes on in there.
Yes, art, classes,
yes,
exercise, sports,
yes,
weddings.
Yes.
It's ballroom dancing.
Yes. Yes.
Wedding parties.
Yes.
Yes, it is definitely one of those, the third space,
yes,
where it's not church and it's not school, but it's alive
it's
in every
community.
Way. We have a gorgeous, thriving community center with community gardens.
Yes.
And I think we have some little varmint living there in the lawn right now that's supposed to be in the Sierra Nevadas. I saw that on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have some... interlopers there, but lovely. And so that's the genesis of the community center.
Yes, it really is. And people don't, I have all the documentation for it. Yes, exactly. It just started.
This is the backstory.
It's the backstory,
yes. It's the backstory, folks. And names we've been hearing, like Vera Schultz and Jean Barnard and Allison Rudy, that these are all, slowly and surely as you're telling me these stories, Kit Wallace, these people that are community activists, these people that are civic-minded, these good citizens who are engaging themselves and their efforts for no payment whatsoever, Don Hunter.
Tireless.
These are the community members that maybe not overnight, but over time and through their influence and the ambiance around them that they create, have created the town that we all love so much. This is a lot of information.
Good.
But we're not done.
Okay.
We're not done at all. Because now I see, as we're coming to the next discussion, I can see a little clearly, more clearly, why the Millie Awards are the Millie Awards. Here you've spent so much of your time here in Mill Valley working with all these people. And then there's that other very important aspect of community-mindedness, which is the appreciation. Mm-hmm. The appreciation, not just the development and the expansion of whatever that matters, but the appreciation for those that create that space or somehow enhance the place we live. And that's what the Millie Awards are all about. Let's talk about those.
Okay.
Okay. So,
Abby Wasserman, have you interviewed?
Yeah. I did not, but she has been interviewed.
Yes, she has. Mm-hmm. Abby was appointed to the Art Commission, and during her time, I think she was on there for 6 years. Towards the end of her time. The Art Commission, The Art Commission depends on the quality of the people that are on it, that you can accomplish things. And Abby was fortunate to have a great group of people. Mm-hmm. And she suggested, because she's great, she has amazing knowledge of what who's done what in the arts. She suggested that the city should honor people in the for creative achievement in the arts in Mill Valley. And so it was an ad hoc situation, I mean, a loosely talked group setting. So she suggested one person, and the Art Commission didn't approve of that person. I think that interview will talk about it. And so she went back to her own personal drawing board and came up with the name of Anne O'Hanlon, and the committee agreed with that.
Agreed that Anne O'Hanlon
could receive the could be honored with
a special recognition.
Yes, special mm-hmm. recognition.
And Anne O'Hanlon, the O'Hanlon Center.
Yes,
the arts. Yes.
And everybody agreed that was a good choice. And they supported Abby. And the first one was presented at a city council meeting, before city council meeting, a certificate presented to her before a city council meeting. And it was very low key. And of course her friends came and there was refreshments and things like this. And so then Abby left and we overlapped 1 year.
Mm-hmm. And have you got a committee name for this?
No.
It was
a Mill Valley Creative Achievement Award.
Okay.
That was the name that they gave it. So the Art Commission at that time and still works on what has to do in front of them. They don't schedule things quite well, at least at that time. So the following year, there wasn't anybody because nobody suggested it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next year, I suggested Wright Morris. And he was a very famous photographer, had 2 National Book Awards. And he was living at the Redwoods. And I called him and he declined, because he didn't want his privacy to be invaded. So that was that. And so then I would have to bring it up every year. Well, how about the Creative Achievement Award? So we gave the next one to Bob Greenwood, and the next one to Leah Schwartz, and Don Carpenter was an author.
And Bob Greenwood being the music teacher for
Tam
High.
Yes, I think
you can listen to his interview.
Yes.
Yes. And Leah Schwartz
is an amazing painter.
Mm-hmm.
She has been quite ill. I don't know if she's even died.
Mm-hmm.
She was an amazing painter.
And then the third?
The third was Mark Fisher.
Mark Fisher, right.
Fishkin.
Fishkin with the film festival.
Yes. So then I left the Art Commission in 1993. I left the Art Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time, people liked the idea, but it was very
the
ad
idea
hoc.
Of honoring people having an
yes.
actual award
yes.
of sorts.
Yes.
Yes.
So I called Abby, Bob Greenwood, and other people that had been on the Art Commission and were no longer in the Art Commission that I knew liked the idea. And I called them together, and Allison Rudy, to form a committee to create, to do it bigger and better.
To have an official recognition.
Yes, but bigger
mm-hmm.
and better.
Mm-hmm.
I thought 5 people in a year, 1 year at a time, they would all die before we got out.
Yeah, right. Why am I laughing, actually?
It's
but
true.
It's true.
And I thought it was very difficult having it at the council chambers, because we had to have it after they got out of closed session. Mm-hmm. People would fall asleep mm-hmm. waiting. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. So anyway, so I didn't like the setting. I didn't like the 1 a year, and I think you could do it bigger and better. So I called together these people. We met at Allison's house for about 16 months, and it was the Millie was Bob Greenwood's idea. The name Millie was Bob
Greenwood's.
Yes. It's a merger of Mill Valley.
Yes, right. Bob or Joe Angelo.
No,
it's Bob
Greenwood.
Yep. Okay.
Bob Greenwood. Joe Angelo was not in there yet.
Yep.
So it was Bob's idea, and then we went through the 16 months of trying to find out how many, where, how, what kind of things that present.
So you're deciding what the categories are.
Yes.
Because you have a category for music, mm-hmm. for visual arts. Mm-hmm. What are the other categories?
Literature, drama, visual, music. The community. The catch-all.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Or the obtuse kind of thing.
Yeah. Doesn't fall into a category.
Yes,
artist.
Yes.
Yes. Or community.
No,
member.
Actually, I used to describe it as those that make the arts happen.
Okay. The promoters.
Like Marilyn Smith or Trish Garlock. Mm-hmm. Those kind of people.
Steve Bajor, did he?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we had to plan out everything. We had to plan out how to do the nominations, what kind of award it was going to be, where it was going to be, when it was going to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that took a long time. So finally, we decided what we wanted to do, and we had a competition for the award, and John Liberton won it. He had a statue that he submitted, and he won it. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful statue.
Yes, it is. Yes. Did you bring your statue
yes,
with
I
you?
Do.
Okay, good. We'll get a photo with that
okay.
statue. Of your Millie.
And
is Millie a man or a woman?
I think it's a female figure.
Okay.
Where am I?
So you have the Millie Awards.
Yes. So then we had the nominations, and we had our first one, and we decided to have it in the fall. And we also have to be careful to not have it during the film festival.
Right. And then there's the Fall Arts Festival, too.
Yes. So it was in October or November, but yeah. we moved it around until we finally gotten a day. Mm-hmm. So we did our nominations, and we got our people, and we had it at the Outdoor Art Club the very first year. Mm-hmm. And we almost filled the place. I think we had 100 people or so in there. And Syra McFadden was the MC. Mm-hmm. And Allison.
Who had a wonderful interview here with the Historical Society, by the way.
Oh, good.
She was a wonderful interviewee. Interesting woman.
Oh, she's amazing.
Clever, smart.
And I called her. I know her personally. Mm-hmm. And we decided, Abby wanted to say, we have to have somebody who everybody loves. So people, Syra's a little controversial sometimes.
Yes, yes.
But anyway, people loved her. So I knew she was in England, so I called her in England and got her to do it. So anyway, she did it, and Allison, you know, showed up. We had George Leonard and Dan Caldwell, Alistair Dillon, ceramicist, and the Frommer family.
Mm-hmm. Frommer family, Dave Frommer,
John
Reed.
And Reed, yes.
Yeah.
And they played, and we sat back and we just looked and we said, we did it right.
We can do it again every year.
We did it right the first time.
Your interview is going to be punctuated with fists on the table.
So,
and you've had how many since that first year?
We've had
how many award ceremonies?
We've had, we're going on our 24th.
And I wrote my first, I sent you a letter last year to suggest an award winner, just to consider. And you have quite a process.
Yes. Yes, we do.
This is no simple, hey, I know somebody really talented kind of a letter.
That's the way it used to be when Abby was first did it. She's throwing names out on the table.
Yes. No, now
Yes.
There's structure.
It's
very structured. Letters, arguments that you prove the reason why, you know.
And so we have, we're in the process of selecting our judges. I maintain a list of potential judges. And we go through our meetings and we, out of maybe 10 names, we pick number 1, 2, and 3. And so number one is the first person we'll call to ask the judge. Mm-hmm. And, or if that person says no, we go to number 2, number 3. We have one yes so far, and we have 2 no's so far. They can't, you know, too much time. It takes a lot of time.
Well, yes. And you can tell that by when you go to the award ceremony.
Yes.
I mean, there's food. There's a wonderful MC. There's information about the performer and the history. There's biographical information.
Yes, I write the program.
You do?
Yes.
Yes. And then there's those really very lovely speeches by the award winners.
Yes.
And it's quite a community event.
Yes.
And so 27 years.
It was about 150 people so far.
Yes. And
and organizations, too. We created special awards. Like the Sally Lieberman Award is for individuals whose creation still exists today. Like Sally. He created the Mill Valley Center for Performing Arts, which became MTC. Mm-hmm. And it still exists today. Mm-hmm. It is not a fly-by-night kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Then the Vera Schultz Award is for organizations who, in their centennial or a significant, you know, the Mountain Play, the Depot, Outdoor Art Club. Then we've gone down to a 70-year, or we did the Chamber Music Society in their 40th year. And this year, last year, Don got the Sally Lieberman Award for his work in all these years. Mm-hmm. It's culminating in the community center.
Do you have a story about the Millie Awards? Oh. Something that happens, a moment, something that stands out, and all this energy, a tremendous amount of effort, all this energy, there must be moments that you just go, what? Or yay? Or have you ever?
Oh, that's a difficult, the things that are kind of difficult, or when we miss somebody that hasn't, we've missed their RSVP, or they have RSVP and they doesn't show up. And then we've had, with Mark Fishkin, I had to do that once. I don't know.
May I say something about the Millie Awards?
Yes.
I've interviewed quite a few people.
Okay.
And many of them Millie Award winners. And, for instance, Bill Champlin, the musician, he said to me, you know, this is a man who's won many musical awards, Grammys, all kinds of awards. And he, as he put it, he said, the single award that means the most to me is my Millie.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. That gives me chills. Yeah.
Well, I think it really speaks to the value of home.
Yes.
Of knowing that you live in a community that, and you give yourself, and to know that your love is appreciated, mm-hmm. and that you are recognized. Mm-hmm. You know, I think most people yearn to be seen, and it's easy to look out, but there's something very important about living someplace where you have the opportunity to appreciate what's right around you. To be proud of the people that you see daily, mm-hmm. to know their history and to know about them in a way that, you know, just gives you that sense of, this is my hometown and these are my mm-hmm. people. And I think, you know, even for those people that have gone out, those great artists and performers that have gone out all over the world and received all kinds of fame, mm-hmm. there's no place like home.
You're right.
You know, so I've heard that several times, by the way.
And a lot of people refer to They're merely recipients as they're in their PR, which I like. I like that too. Going back to your question about events or things I can remember, I've forgotten what year it was, but we had 275 people RSVP, which meant 32 tables. And you can only, they only have chairs for 250.
Must be a fire code, too. How
many people? 32 tables.
Cheek to jowl, right?
Yes. So Joe and Julo had to go over to the middle school and carry 20 chairs from the middle school over there.
The night of the
setting up.
He's a good man.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And he said, and of course people were just butting into each other. And at that day, he said, never again. So we said, after that, we said,
Capper off.
250 is max.
Yeah.
That's 25 chairs, 25 tables.
Yeah.
Or 26 tables.
So buy your tickets early.
Yes. Yes.
Well, this has been so interesting. I have a couple more questions before we finish this interview. Are there any other people that you have, you know, obviously you've been so inspired by various people around you. You've learned a lot from them. You've admired them. They've kept you going. The collaborations are wonderful to hear. But has there anybody else that you would like to talk about that has been a really important influence for you?
Yes. I think one person that I need to mention is Peter Baer, who was the years of moderate Republicans. He was a dream. He went through the chairs of Mill Valley City Council, a Planning Commission, City Council, Board of Supervisors, two terms, and State Senate, two terms. And I knew him from the years that he was on the City Council, the years I was involved in politics. And I had worked on many campaigns as a precinct precinct. So I was chairman of his precinct chair for him, county chair. And he was, people loved Peter Baer. He was a gentleman. He was, his integrity was unimpeachable. He was so gracious. He was so eloquent. He was just, he had it all wrapped together. And he did great, great legislation. He was so fun. He had the whole package. And I remember during the primary and the general election, I managed his office. And it was fun. And then remember the time he won, the celebration was wonderful. And I went to his inauguration ceremony in Sacramento. That was fun. But he was an amazing person. And it made me want to do more, but then I got into the things.
Sounds like an elegant man.
Yes, he was elegant. He was elegant, integrity, everything.
When you think about Mill Valley and you look forward, I mean, you seem to be a visionary of sorts anyway. You seem to be you're obviously involved in things in the future. What do you see for Mill Valley? What's your hope for Mill Valley?
We're looking at that Mill Valley's future through the Millies, because I'm retiring at the end of this year. And I have to do other things in my life. I'm sad to see the funkiness of Mill Valley going.
The funkiness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And for thinking of the arts, young people can no longer afford to live here. In order to live here, to buy in, they have to have made it already. They have to have done their achievements.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the old days, Mill Valley was the home of people just starting. Sam Shepard, Coppola, George Lucas, even Tom Killian.
Mm-hmm.
I have a piece of his I bought from high school when he was a high school student.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're not able to experience them as they grow and they get better and they better, better and better and they make their name. We can recognize their lifelong achievements, or we can watch them as they achieve. I think that Miller Avenue is symbolic of the change of the loss of funkiness, because now it's glitz, it's smooth and it's elegant, it's pretty. And I think that people now move in, expect things to be at a different level. We've lost the blue collar people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that on my street, if you look at the pictures in the books in the library about dictionaries. I mean the directories.
Mm-hmm.
You look a lot. They're all blue collar people.
Mm-hmm.
They're clerks. They're mechanics. They're tellers. And now they're all established.
Mm-hmm.
And people. Everybody knew each other as friends or the neighbors. And now I don't know my neighbors anymore. I can say hello to them across the street, but I don't really know what their names are, which is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I have two neighbors that have been there for years, and I don't know their names. I know Kitty Corner to, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be the same town ever again, as in the years that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Future. I read something in one of the local newspapers that Mill Valley has the highest income. Even Kenfield or Ross, which is debatable because other papers say something else. And it's their own privacy. They're more concerned about their own privacy. It takes a really strong approach to get them to be involved. I don't know.
Sounds to me like you're saying that when you're looking at the future of a community, that it would be a pitifully sad thing to lose that community involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That, if I may be so bold as to put words into your mouth, that it's important for you to either mourn the loss of this or encourage the sustainment of this kind of community action.
Statement of what
of this kind of involvement, the sense of small town, knowing the importance of, although it may seem that the tide's coming in and taking out so much, the fact is, in your description of everything that you've done and everything you're still doing, and for many of us that are involved in things like the Historical Society or with the theater, or it's still here.
Yes.
But sometimes extreme wealth can be rather blinding. It's a little hard to see beyond the bright glare of all those beautiful cars and fancy homes. But, you know, in the shade, it's still going on.
Yes.
And it's something that is worth preserving, I think. Hoping that people will, and that that many people say this in the interviews, that they're worried about the small town, sense of small town being displaced, but not just here in this town, but everywhere.
Yes.
So it's a concern. If you, in your perfect vision of Mill Valley in 20 years, 30 years, what do you see? You get to dream your perfect Mill Valley.
Goodness gracious. Oh, what hard question. I still hope there's some old thing still alive, still, you know. I hope people still are involved in the community, and they don't have to be pulled into it. I mean, you know, they have to be pulled in by ropes to get involved. That they come forward and they do their things.
That giving spirit.
I hope that people. Run for city council because we have to have a choice and not win by default. I hope that the landmark still exists. The downtown is wonderful. And Miller Avenue is spiffing up. It's going to be the new suburb, I think, because all the buildings going on down there. That hill is another story, but later.
Okay.
I won't tell it. I just hope that old homes are not displaced by new ones.
Hold on to what's good in the past.
Yes.
You have given so much, and I just want to make sure we recognize your family because you've been sharing yourself with everybody else, and I bet you that your family has missed you from time to time with all your actions. So let's make sure we get the names of your family. Your husband's name?
James W.
James Shaw.
Yes.
And then your sons are?
Jeffrey. Will. No, David and Will.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Last question.
Okay.
Is there anything we haven't talked about today that you wish we had? Have we missed anything?
Let me see. No.
We covered it?
I think so.
Okay, well, good citizen and political activist and visionary, Truby, thank you so much for the time you've spent with me today in the rubber room here in the basement of the Mill Valley Library.
You're so gracious.
Thank you so much for all your efforts over all these years, for all the wonderful things that you've done that have, we could think of staples like the Memorial Weekend and the arts, and for the continued work that you're going to do with the Millies, or not do. I imagine you're going to still be involved in some level. But thank you just for being yourself and for sharing your story. So this is Deborah Schwartz ending this interview on March 15th with Truby Stock. And thanks very much.
Well, my pleasure.